Welcome to episode 184 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on June 26th, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Ben and Scott kind of diverge from the Azure and Microsoft 365 news and spend the first 15 minutes talking about various tidbits from Apple's WWDC conference. So if you don't care about their thoughts on Apple, skip the first 15 minutes and jump to the second half of the episode, where they discuss some recent SharePoint and OneDrive news. My brain is still on vacation.
Yeah, it's still stuck in the mountains of North Carolina.
It is Georgia. We didn't go to North Carolina.
Oh.
We stuck to Georgia. It was almost North Carolina.
Did you stick to Georgia, or did Georgia stick on you? It's a little muggy this time of year.
You know what? It was actually really nice.
Because you're going to the mountains.
Because we were in the mountains. Like, we'd wake up in the morning and it was like 55, 60 degrees. And it was beautiful. So we took hikes, let my kids go play in the streams and throw rocks. And naturally, because it was cool, we didn't take swimsuits, or they weren't wearing swimsuits. So we just let them soak their clothes and they had fun. And then the very last day it was hot. So we spent the day playing in the pool that was there and on the beach and in boats and social distancing in boats, canoes and kayaks and all that.
Nice.
So it was. It was a good break.
Well, I mean, if you ever do it again and you want, you can always borrow the paddle boards. I have inflatable paddle boards. Those are fun.
You do. So they had some paddle boards there that we could use too. And I did not try one. I thought about trying to get my kids on one with me, but I have not actually paddleboarded before.
All right, let's do a quick thought experiment. You're in a chair, yes?
So if I can sit in a chair, you're saying I can paddleboard?
No, quite the opposite. If you can stand up out of the chair and stand without putting your like hand on the chair to hold you up, you're probably pretty good and ready to go.
I'm pretty good. Well, see, and I can snowboard and ski and all that, so I could probably do it just fine.
Yeah.
But I also wasn't sure how well the paddleboards... Like, have you ever put a kid on your paddleboard with you?
Yeah. Kids, yep.
Okay.
Tried the dogs, yeah.
Oh, see, so yeah, I probably could have done it. Guess we'll have to go do it again. An excuse to go on another vacation.
There you go.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email. So Scott, how was iOS 14? In completely unrelated cloud news.
I can't pull the trigger. I've got the profile
done. Oh, you haven't done it yet?
No, I haven't done it yet. Because all my devices are daily drivers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Every single one of them. And I'm not as brave as you are.
I thought based on your tweets that you had actually pulled the trigger on at least a device.
I'm sure I will at some point. I don't know. My biggest concern at this point isn't programs not working. Like I would think most of the apps that I need are available as websites anyway. So that's fine.
Except for Mario Kart.
Oh, I don't play Mario Kart.
I play Mario Kart. Mario Kart is my only broken app.
I don't even know why you play that on an iPhone. Get a Switch.
I don't have a Switch. That's why I play it on the iPhone.
Yeah, like that stuff's all fine and okay. But I am also on a set of managed devices, so they're all joined to Intune and things like that. I don't know how Intune's going to react when it sees iOS 14 and if it considers that an iOS version number it doesn't know about, and then all of a sudden I'm jailbroken and it's a big pain to go backwards and, you know, got to back up, do the IPSW restore and all that kind of stuff.
'Tis true. Yes, I was forgetting about the fact that the whole Intune management and that actually cares about build numbers and...
Who knows if it does or if it doesn't. I just don't want to be the one to try it. So I'll probably try it with the public beta when it's an even worse time to do it. And
Yeah, that's when all the companies start locking it down, when the public beta is actually out and all of their employees could go do it just easily.
Well, public betas aren't too bad. They're usually a dev release or two behind. So the expectation would be that in another week or two, you go from dev beta 1 to dev beta 2. And that takes us into July. And then at some point in July, public beta 1 comes out. But public beta 1 is really the same build as dev beta 2 or dev beta 3. And then they track behind a little bit from there.
I feel like as a company, though, I'd start trying to lock it down more once it hit public beta, because you're going to get a lot more people that go install it once it hits public beta.
Yeah.
Where dev beta, you're not going to get as many people that are going to go try it.
Well, you're going to get...
I don't know.
You're going to get crazy people like you and I that don't do any type of development on Apple. Like, I'm not building or releasing iOS apps or Mac apps, but we're paying to be in the dev program so that we can have access to beta profiles.
Because we just don't have any patience when it comes to shiny new toys.
That's it. Give me, you know what? All I want is my live tiles and my full convergence of iOS, Android, and WebOS. That's all I need.
Oh, I totally, like, there's some stuff here. This can cause some controversy. I did not see anything. So I watched the key. Well, I did not watch the keynote. I had the keynote playing in the background for WWDC. I did not see anything that was innovative in that entire keynote up until the last 30 minutes. Everything else I looked at and I was like, they ripped that off from Windows Phone, from Android, from something else. And then the only, in my opinion, the only really innovative thing or groundbreaking thing they started talking about was their plan to switch from Intel to ARM and to go to all of their own silicone chips. That was the most innovative thing I saw in the entire however many hours they talked about all of the stuff they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the point in the cycle where innovation's tough, but everybody can refine and riff on a series of ideas, right? Which
right.
I'm totally fine with. Like, people complain that, like, oh, Apple took that from Android or it came from WebOS or whatever it was. Like, yeah, certainly there's inspiration to be found there, but quite often the Apple way of doing it, for better or worse, is more refined. Or if it's not more refined, like, way more people are going to use it. Both my parents have Android phones. They don't even know what widgets on the home screen are. But I guarantee you that every single person who has an iPhone, once they figure out widgets are there, they're going to be lit up and be a thing.
Right.
And that's the power of that ecosystem.
And I don't have a problem with that. Like, again, I'm love the widgets. I like the idea. It's not that I'm expecting them to be innovative. I think it's the fact that I feel like a lot of times they sell it as being innovative. And it's this magical new experience and this beautiful thing. And
well, that's the job of marketing. That's a different conversation.
Oh, yes.
You could be like yogurt in Spaceballs. It's just merchandising, merchandising, merchandising.
Yes, it's fine. Go do it and do it better and get more people to adopt it and make it simpler. But don't sell it as a brand new idea. Some of us were making iOS better, and you do not need a keynote that long to cover what they did. But anyways, that has absolutely nothing to do with Cloud News. That's just me ranting.
So, I mean, there's some fun stuff there, and it's kind of exciting. And so you mentioned Apple Silicone. So that's going to bring ARM into the mainstream as well. Like, today, there's all sorts of ARM devices out there. You've got things like iOS devices or iPadOS devices, so iPhones and iPads and things like that. There's a slew of Android tablets, like all the Fire HD tablets. Microsoft has a Surface Pro X, or is it X or 10? I don't even know. I think it's the X.
I don't know.
But that's the ARM-based Surface Pro tablet. So that's just been kicking around for a while. But again, it's going to be kind of Apple potentially bringing it mainstream and lighting some of that up. So that's going to be exciting as well, like to have kind of a new fun convergence thing going on.
Right, at least.
But it's going to be all locked down in the Apple-y kind of ways. So good luck installing custom OSs and all the things that you're used to.
I was going to say, until it comes to installing my Windows VM on an ARM-based Mac, like we actually started talking about before we were recording this, is that's going to be a very interesting experience and even just interesting to see how that develops over the next couple of years. And if it can be done, how it can be done. Like Mac mentioned some, like they said, and we're going to support virtualization. And that was about all they mentioned about virtualization. But if you did look at it, they specifically left out Windows. They focused on Linux. That's going to be interesting to see what happens to being able to run Windows in something like VMware or Parallels on a Mac in 2 or 3 years' time.
Well, so the reality of the way that's going to go is, and I'll put some links to like overviews of the keynote from WWDC. I'll also put a link to the platform State of the Union, which if you watch the keynotes, but you're actually into how the stuff works on the back end a little bit more, or you want to know a little bit more about it, everybody should go watch the platform State of the Union, because that talks about where the SDKs and development frameworks are going and how things like virtualization are going to work, at least at a high level. So the first time Apple did this, when they went and made the transition from PowerPC to Intel, they built an entire virtualization engine that they called Rosetta. And this time, as they go from Intel over to their custom silicon, they've got a translation system that they're calling Rosetta 2. So Apple's been on this march for a long time. They've deprecated 32-bit. They've been 64-bit for the last couple of years now, at least for like developers submitting new apps and things like that across every platform, iOS and macOS as well. They're going to build a translation layer to take you from x64, x86 instructions over to where they need to be on the other side with Rosetta. So that'll get you through all your apps that you download from the App Store, whether it's in, the Mac App Store, it could be like a DMG you download off the internet, like that translation will go ahead and happen for you. But they're only translating to make, traditional Mac apps run. Their job isn't going to be, and they're approaching it in a way where they're not going to translate the entire instruction set for an x86 device. They had a demo in the keynote, I think it was in the keynote, with Parallels, which is a piece of virtualization software running Linux. So, but they're running Linux on a kernel that supports ARM. So they're not having to do all that translation, and it just kind of works through because you don't need to rely on Rosetta to get there. And the reality is the VMwares of the world and the Apple, VMwares and Parallels and things like that, there's nothing to stop them from continuing to offer Windows in their software, but they're going to have to write the entire translation layer. And who knows if that's a bridge too far. So Apple's going to provide it up to a point, but you're going to be relying on the virtualization vendors at that point to do the rest of that for you.
So another question is, we did not talk about this ahead of time, the Surface Pro X that's running on an ARM-based processor, in theory, that would be significantly easier than to virtualize on these new ARM-based Macs.
Yes, but that's effectively an OEM'd version of Windows. So you can't go out today.
You can't grab that from MSDN or something.
Right. Yeah, you can't just go ahead and pull that down. So then it's a licensing thing. Would Microsoft allow that? And that's certainly a viable path forward should that happen or come to fruition. But in today's world, that's not where things are at. And there'd be a lot more work that has to be done there. Like Windows on ARM, if you look at like the Surface Pro X, it's built kind of like Apple builds their OSs. It's built and certified for a small number of devices versus Windows on x86, which is, open to the entire world.
Run it anywhere. Well, you look back to even like Surface RT was the first Surface that was on ARM-based, and all the problems that people had with that, getting apps that would actually work and you could use, and it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be some fun times. So if you're into like geeky things like that, like there's all sorts of fun options out there for you.
Yes. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
So, should we talk about some cloud-based news now, now that we're done with our iOS news?
Sure.
With our Mac geeky stuff?
Yeah, we can do that.
We can. Thanks. I'm glad I got your permission to talk about that. So, a new one that I saw, and I don't remember exactly when this one came out, is shortcuts to shared folders for OneDrive for work or school. So this is kind of an interesting one. And there is, I will not lie, the article, you and I both flipped through this article about it. And it's slightly confusing when you go read the article and limitations and all of that.
Yeah, I need you to explain this to me because I still don't know what it does.
Well, so I'm not going to dive into all the technical details of this article because I need to go like read it slowly from beginning to end. But essentially, you and I have different SharePoint tenants, right? So I go share a folder from OneDrive or from SharePoint or from Teams from my work tenant to your work tenant. And you now get this invite. You can access the shared folder. And I don't know if you've ever noticed it before, but that essentially shows up under, like if you would go to your OneDrive, you would see shared with me. And it would show up as a shared with me folder. But the only place you could really access it was from your web-based OneDrive. So now you can take shortcuts and you can pick and choose these folders that are shared with you and add them as a shortcut to OneDrive. And then these shortcuts will appear in OneDrive on the web, on Windows Explorer, on Finder, Teams, OneDrive mobile apps, wherever you have these OneDrive clients. That gives you that ability to kind of sync them, to take them offline, even though they're not in your tenant. They're just shared with your account in your tenant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then this article goes through a whole bunch of different conditions about, well, if you're going to do this or this, it doesn't work, or it's not going to sync in this case, or like, it doesn't look like it's fully baked in yet.
Yes, there's a couple things like, kind of like you said, limitations or on top of it. So it looks like it's just for shared folders. It's not for individual shared files, which, you know, for better or worse, is what it is there. But this brings parity with, I think it's been one of those longstanding things with like Dropbox, certainly yep. Google Drive, all those kinds of things. I remember when one of the companies I worked at, getting our CEO off of Google Drive was nigh upon impossible. And we were big proponents of Office 365 internally using Azure a bunch. And, you know, the rest of the company, like that was our collaboration solution of choice. We're an office shop, all those things. Couldn't get the CEO off of Google Drive because all of his other peers that he worked with at like other companies, they would just share a file in Google Drive and it would automatically show up in his Google Drive on his desktop, you know, his synced G Drive folder. And yep. It was just there. Same thing happens in Dropbox. Somebody shares a folder with you in Dropbox, you get a notification in the Dropbox client. And, you know, all of a sudden, magically, this folder shows up in your Dropbox. I don't think people even realize that they can move those folders around. Like one of my things, like in my Dropbox, to keep it organized, I actually keep a big top level folder called shared from others. And then anytime somebody shares a folder with me, because it lands in the root and I don't like the root to get all messy like that, I'll clean it up and move it over. But it still maintains its sharing relationship and all those kinds of things. End of the day, there's a lot of other products that have had this type of functionality, and this kind of brings parity, which is a good thing.
Right. Although I think one difference here, though, is you do have to go add the shortcut. is it's not going to automatically do this for every folder that's shared with you.
Yes. Well, I think that's probably in the case of something like SharePoint. That's not the end of the world because you're going to have lots of things that show up as shared with you, particularly under that shared context, because it's not things that have been potentially explicitly shared with you. Somebody adds you to a team and that team has backing storage inside of SharePoint Online. That shows up as a shared thing with you. Like when you go to, you know, shared and,
when
and
you
shared
look at
with me.
OneDrive. Yep.
So that's potentially a lot of stuff.
So yeah, I agree.
Every site that somebody adds you to, or you get added to a security group and now you're a member of 300 new sites and all of a sudden all those sites sync down automatically, that's like not the greatest thing. But now you potentially have a mechanism to say, okay, Ben shared that folder with me. I would like that folder to be easily accessible on my desktop through OneDrive Sync. I'd also like it to be easier to find inside maybe the mobile clients or the web views, things like that. Like, I don't want to have to go spelunking where I go to OneDrive in a web browser, I click on shared, and I drill down six levels to find the thing I want. I just want it right here.
Right. It makes sense. It's kind of like the fact that you can have access, like you said, to all those SharePoint files, and you don't necessarily have to sync every SharePoint site you have access to. This is letting you pick and choose what you want to sync of those things that are shared with you.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
More choice, more flexibility, good things. So is this out today? Gradually rolling out in public preview, and we will be available worldwide by the end of September 2020. I'm just poking through like, you know, like my test tenant, and I don't see it there.
I haven't tried in mine. I was just jumping into mine as well because I have not shared with me, removed from my shared list. Yeah, I don't think I have it in mine either yet. So I don't know exactly where it is in that roadmap, but like you said, September, I mean, it's the beginning of July was next 3 months, you should have it there.
Yeah. So here's a fun one. Here's a fun limitation of thinking about like sharing files and folders and things like that. So all those files are now shared with you in a folder, but they technically live in another user's storage. So if you share a folder with me and I sync it to my desktop, if I delete the files from my desktop from the sync, they're also going to delete in your share, which makes total sense, right? Because that's where the things live.
I mean, that's the way all the other products work too, right? Well, no, they ask.
To a certain degree, they ask, right? If I have a shared folder in Dropbox and I go to delete something, it says, do I want to delete it just for me? Like, do I want to remove it from my local storage or do I want to remove it for everyone? Which is different.
Yes, that is true. I had forgotten that they do ask. And this one, it does not look like... Yes, they are immediately sent to the recycle bin of the user who shared it with you. There is no prompt, it appears.
Yep. The other fun thing about that is if you read that section about deleting, so this entire article focuses exclusively on SharePoint Online, OneDrive for Business, and Microsoft Teams. But if you go down to that deleting section, it talks about OneDrive.com a lot, which is the consumer service, has nothing to do with the...
Oh, my.
Merchandising.
What shall we do? I got nothing.
I would say you should submit a fix to that article, but since it's not on docs.microsoft.
Oh, it's not on docs yet.
You can't. Well, it's supportoffice.com, which, or support.microsoft.com, which is a different property.
Yeah, they need to get all those over to docs.
Can't just edit things there.
So, another one, since we're talking about the whole OneDrive, SharePoint, and files, did you see you can now store really large files? I was going to say you could store your, I'm going to say it anyways, you could store your ripped DVD collection in SharePoint or OneDrive.
You've been able to do that for a while if you're willing to split it up into pieces.
Yeah, but you had to split it up into pieces and you couldn't do like MKV files and some of those. You now have up to 100 gigabyte files in SharePoint and OneDrive. Who wants to upload a 100 gigabyte file to OneDrive or SharePoint?
Yeah. who indeed?
Engineering companies with CAD files.
But this isn't that new, right? This was announced a while ago. February. They announced this back at Ignite last year.
Is it just now rolling out then?
Maybe.
Because I saw a bunch of, like, I saw it in my message center, but I also saw a bunch of people Like, I saw this surface on Twitter in the last week. Oh, so here it is. Maybe if we read the dates in the article, it would help. June 24, 2020, updated the file upload size to reflect that 100 gigabytes is now fully rolled out. So they must have just finished the rollout of it at some point in time, because it just says the article was updated to imply that it's fully rolled out, which means some people may have missed it, because as that document said, and as we have talked about, and there's another example we pulled today too, documentation and what's available does not always line up, and the status of certain features.
True story.
The documents are at least, yes, and it's fully rolled out. You can put 100 gigabyte files in SharePoint. They still recommend that if you're going to do files that big, use the sync client. I also recommend you not do too many of those, because if you're using the sync client to sync 100 gigabyte files and you only have a 1 terabyte hard drive, you can only do about 10 of those files before your entire computer is filled up. And that assumes you actually had nothing on your computer already. So I do not know too many people that are uploading 100 gigabyte files to SharePoint, but if you want to, you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what you do and kind of where you're sitting day to day. You're probably not working with 100 gigabyte PowerPoint decks, but you know, certainly if you're doing CAD or medical imaging or a bunch of other things, those are pretty big files.
Yeah, although from the whole speed perspective, I mean, can you imagine doing a 100 gigabyte file with files on demand when you go to open it and you have to download a 100 gigabyte file?
Yeah, it's what it is.
You're essentially going to have to do, right? Unless you have a massive amount of storage space on your computer and you're keeping, I don't know. I mean, obviously there's a use case for it. Somebody wanted it. I don't know what it is. If you want a 100 gigabyte file in SharePoint or OneDrive, can you let us know why? Like, ping us on Twitter, send us a message, because I'm genuinely curious who wants to upload 100 gigabyte files to SharePoint or OneDrive and how you actually plan to interact with those files or what the use case is for storing those files.
I would bet a big part of it is there's a difference between interaction and saving it for later.
See, and I can see like an archive type.
You get a lot of storage effectively as part of your license. And depending on your segment where you sit, you probably want to leverage as much of that storage as you can.
Yeah, but yeah.
Back to that whole, should you back up your, you know,
computer?
Yeah, your entire library.
See, I still have problems seeing it though, because how many people have, like, what are you backing up? I guess unless you're backing up videos, maybe you're doing YouTube videos. But even then, someone like me, I only have 1.5 terabytes of SharePoint storage because it's just me. I don't have a ton of licenses. I don't even know if I have that much. I can't put that many files. I can't back up that much stuff to SharePoint. SharePoint's a expensive backup option.
Yeah.
I don't know. Goes back to, I want to know a use case. I'm genuinely curious.
There's got to be somebody out there somewhere who can help you with that.
I know. Well, that's why I want them to send us a message on Twitter or something. We'll even bring you on the podcast to talk about your use case for 100 gigabyte files. I'll throw that one out there. You can have a guest talking about storing large files in SharePoint and what their scenario is. Oh, good times.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
Should we do one more news article?
Sure.
Because this is one that is a long time coming. This has been painful. The Term Store in SharePoint. Remember a good old friend, the Term Store?
I love the MMS service.
It has now been modernized. I don't know that the MMS service in the background has changed at all, but this is, I don't know what stage this is in its rollout. They announced this back in April I think this was around when the SharePoint conference was going to be, maybe slightly before. And I will say this is a part of Project Cortex. I think it's part of that whole Project Cortex. Well, there's a lot of AI stuff bundled into it. This is kind of tied into that as a whole bundle. But now if you go to your SharePoint Admin Center, hopefully, I don't know that this is 100% rolled out now, you have a new content services option in the new modern updated SharePoint Admin Center. Under there, you have Term Store, which gives you a modernized view of the Term Store. It's not a new Term Store. All your old terms are still there. It looks like most of the functionality is there still around synonyms and translations and languages and
all the things that you know to be
advanced with custom properties. Right. They like took the Term Store and just put new skin on it and brought it into the modern UI, which it's a good first step. There's some additional things coming along with it, like another one that the content type gallery.
That's kind of a big one, is centralizing content type management.
And that one is one I don't have that in my admin center yet. I only have the modernized Term Store, but I'm actually looking more forward to the content type gallery being there. I think a lot of people don't even know about it unless you've been in SharePoint for a long time, because you have to know where it is, which if you haven't, it's at /site/content-type-hub. And even some of the permissions sometimes are wonky around it. But bringing this into the admin center and having the content type hub located there and all your content type management in the admin center is a very welcome change. Something that should have been done from the start, in my opinion.
Yes. Yeah. We've talked about this a bunch. You always want it to be there on day one.
I do. Well, I mean, day one, like not even SharePoint Online. Like when they first developed MMS and the Content Type Hub, it's always been its own site collection. It should have just been in, they should have developed it back in SharePoint 2007 was when the Content Type Hub first surfaced. Back then, it should have been in Central Admin because it's always been an administrative type feature. I don't know. I guess maybe they were thinking power users would do it, and this gave you the ability to just let power users mess with the content type and the content type hub and roll their own by putting it in a site collection that you could set permissions on. To me, it's always been the SharePoint admins that have managed the content types and set them up and helped users configure them and get them published and make sure you don't have duplicate content types and all of that. So those are both coming. Again, I've seen the Term Store more and more. I have yet to see the Content Type Hub show up in my admin center.
Yeah, I haven't played with that one. Not that I have much of a need to these days, but
yeah. When is the last time you've actually played with SharePoint administration? Let's be honest.
About 2 weeks ago.
Oh, 2 weeks ago. All right. Well, I'm glad you were able to play with it 2 weeks ago. I was doing the math in my head.
I'm not in there every day like you are.
Yes, 'tis true. So I think that wraps it up for today. I don't have a whole lot else, unless there's one of these other ones you wanted to mention.
No, that's good.
But that makes a good show. We'll put something in the intro to let people know to skip the first 15 minutes if they don't care about Mac stuff.
Well, they should all care about that.
They should, because we care about it. And just like everybody should have everything day one, everybody should care about the same things we care about. No, I'm just joking. Don't send me angry tweets.
Tweet a pen. If anybody needs his email address, tweet at me. I'll let you know it.
And I will give you my new email address.
Ben@hay.com?
Ben@scotthogue.com. Mm-hmm. Do you own scotthogue.com or does somebody else?
I don't. Somebody else has that one.
It's unfortunate. All right. Well, with that, we will call it a wrap for today. And we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.